Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yes, and I'm happy to say I will be joined today by Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. And I know, Julie, we are awaiting our turf guru, John Trappi, as well. Right?
That's right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot of good power, brain power here this morning. So if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your hour here on Smart Garden. Call us or text us at 651-461-9226. And while we're waiting for John to join us, Julie, this rain, I mean, it's hearing the rain on my on the windows is wonderful. I love it.
It's great. Yeah, it's been really wonderful. It's taken us out of our drought status in a lot of places, which is wonderful. And then also it has, really just helped green things up. I mean, it's just amazing how fast plants will just start emerging. It's really awesome.
And Julie, I think John has joined us.
April showers bring May flowers.
That's right.
Woohoo!
John, good morning. Welcome. Thanks for joining us along with Julie today. And again, 651-461-9226. We're already getting, not a big surprise, the questions that came in actually even before the show started. So maybe we should just get underway here so we don't get kind of backlog. Let me just start with this first text this morning, if I may. Should we cut back our spindly hydrangeas? I was filling in bare spots, Texter says, on our lawn 3 weeks ago. I roughed up the area, seeded and covered with soil, have watered. Nothing is happening. Do you think something's wrong?
Well,
so
I'll address
a couple of questions there. Looks
I'll address the hydrangea question first because we have an excellent resource on our extension yard and garden site. It's the Turf and Shrubs webpage under Yard and Garden, and it is a video on how to prune your hydrangeas. So you can take a look at that. And yes, you can certainly prune your hydrangeas now.
Okay, John, what do you think about there's nothing growing yet as far as the seeded areas?
I would try to be just a little bit patient because I personally seeded some areas. I live in the Twin Cities and I haven't seen any germination yet of any of the fine fescues that I seeded. Even though I'm confident they'll still emerge. So be just a little bit patient. If you don't see anything in the next week or 10 days, that's when I would start being concerned and maybe consider seeding just a little bit more.
All right, very good.
Hey, John, could it have anything to do with the seed itself?
There is potential if it was, if it was seed that was old and, had very low germination rates. Every package of seed that you purchase has a testing date as well as a sampling date on the label itself. So if you have some old seed and you're wondering about whether or not it's still viable. You can start there. Another thing you could do is just try to do a simple germination test by just using some paper towels. If there's any doubt about some old seed maybe you have left over from years past, you can always just use a paper towel and put some seed in it between two layers and water that, and then just put that inside a Ziploc bag and just see what kind of germination you get from those seeds in a controlled environment. But most of the time, seed is good for a couple of years as long as it's kept dry.
Okay, good to know. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Traffy from the U of M answering those questions now, especially today, and Julie will agree, as long as we have John with us this morning, if you have any kind of a turf-type question, your lawn question, this is an opportunity to ask John those very questions. And, of course, any other kind of a gardening question for Julie as well. Again, callers, texters. In fact, let's go to the phones. Tom is calling this morning in from Golden Valley. Tom, what is your question this morning?
Good morning. A pest control company recently inspected our property and said they found termites in the trees near our house. Is this for real? Are termites in Minnesota, and do I need to do anything?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Termites are in Minnesota, but they are subterranean, as I understand. The little bit that I know about termites, they're not a big problem here because of our winters that we have and our conditions. But anything that we might have, in fact, here's a... Let me just click on this. I'm looking at our household insect information. And it just says that they're basically pretty rare here. So one thing you could do is contact the entomology department at the University of Minnesota. And if you can capture any of them, that would be great. And you could see if somebody could identify them conclusively for you. But they're very rare in Minnesota, and they're subterranean. They wouldn't be necessarily in a tree. More likely, and I would think the pest control folks would know the difference, they may be carpenter ants that are, if you have a rotting tree or something like that. So, it'd be really good to have them identified conclusively by maybe an impartial party.
I have never heard in all my years on CCO, and there are many, that have termites in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities specifically. You know what? I personally would call a good arborist.
An arborist as well. Sure. Yeah, they could come in here as well. But there are different stages of life cycle of carpenter ants, and they can be kind of a confusion between the two of them.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I would
find it very unusual if there was, especially if they're in a tree. Sometimes insects
get to, for whatever reason, try to do some exercise.
Sorry about that. sometimes insects come through shipping materials and packaging materials, but then they would usually be found in those materials and not necessarily be infecting a tree.
Yeah. Tom in Golden Valley, if you ever get an answer on that one way or the other, we'd love to hear back. It's interesting. Let's grab another call before we pick up on text messages. Bobby's calling in from Bloomington this morning. Bobby, what is your question, please?
Well, good morning, first of all. I overwinter my geraniums in the house, and they've been blooming somewhat all winter. When can I put them outside?
They can go outside when our evening temperatures are roughly around in the 50s, and they're kind of coming up as far as what I've seen. So on a personal note, my geraniums are outside, but they're in a pretty protected space. So they do need to acclimate to the outdoors. So you don't want to put them directly right in the sun, but just kind of put them in a shady, protected site. Keep them out of the wind if you can. And we've had such windy days. And then slowly move them into a sunnier environment. But look for those 50-degree nighttime temperatures.
All right. Very good. Texter Julie and John want to know, when is the best time to treat ash tree for EAB?
Oh, that that you can find out on our Emerald Ash Borer webpage on our site. And I think it's, I want to say it's usually around this time of year, but I'm not entirely certain. There may be a couple different times of year to treat for that. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture also has good information on that. They also have good decision-making tools as to whether you need to treat or not. There's a couple different things that you have to consider: cost, frequency, affecting other plants around the tree if you're doing a soil drench, whether the tree is worth it, how valuable it is. So take a look at that. You can start, though, at the University of Minnesota Extension page under Yard and Garden, or just type Emerald Ash Borer into our search window, and you'll get your information there.
John, what can we do, homeowners, for our lawns at this time? I mean, is it the fertilizing, weed and feed? What should or should not we do to our lawns at this this point, this week or next?
Well, we definitely do not recommend weed and feed products anymore. That's a pretty good starting point. But if somebody is looking to try to fill in any gaps from grass that maybe have been lost last summer or fall or winter even, this is a great time to apply a spring fertilizer. And I think, you know, any time right now before, especially taking advantage of these rainfall events we have coming up, is a great time to apply a little bit of nitrogen in the fertilizer or from the fertilizer.
Okay. All right, hang on. We'll take a quick break and be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question this morning for Julie or John, please call or text 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, it's 56 degrees. We should see highs of around 61 and a chance of showers overnight. And for your Sunday tomorrow, showers are likely, possibly even a thunderstorm Sunday and Sunday night. So be aware of that. Overcast now, CCO temp 56. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. We thank Julie Wisenhorn and John Trappe from the U of M joining us today, answering any kind of a lawn question you may have and a garden question as well at 651-461-9226. Julie and John, Rick is calling in, I believe, from Buffalo this morning. Rick, good morning. What is your question, please?
I got a question on lawn. I've got a bunch of cedar trees in my backyard, and can't seem to get grass to grow underneath of them. Is it because of the soil, or the cedar trees don't allow for grass to grow? Just trying to get it to become grassy instead of such a muddy hole.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really common problem. Trying to grow anything underneath of a cedar tree. They really block out sunlight and then rain. And, of course, they're competing for nutrients from the soil. So there's a it's just really difficult to get anything to grow, especially turf grasses. So it's kind of pick and choose whether or not you'd like to have the cedar trees or have the lawn, but you're probably not going to be able to have both, at least in the exact same spot.
Okay. This listener sent this text. I have a hydrangea for Easter. I got a hydrangea for Easter in a small pot. Had it transplanted in a big pot. Can I put it outside now?
Yeah, again, it's if it's been indoors all the time, then you want to acclimate your plants to go outside into the new environment, basically, that they're going to grow in. And we're looking for temperatures in the 50s at night, maybe high 40s you could get away with in a protected location. And with these plants, you want to just work them into their ideal situation. So if they're a full sun plant like the hydrangea, you would want to start by just putting it in a protected space, out of the wind, in a shady location, and then work it just, you know, every few days as it acclimates to that condition, then move it into a little bit more sun, a little bit more sun. And that will help the plant acclimate into the newer conditions. It is probably not a hardy hydrangea. These are florist hydrangeas. And so you can just enjoy it for the summer and then decide in the fall if it's a plant that you want to try to overwinter in your house and hopefully enjoy it next year too.
Very good. A listener says or asks, is it okay to put 10-10-10 fertilizer on my rhubarb?
Oh, yeah. Rhubarb is actually a pretty big feeder. In other words, it needs quite a bit of nutrition. And if you're starting to see a plant that is maybe, you know, the petioles, which is the part we eat, people would call them the stems, but they're actually petioles. If you start to see them smaller and maybe kind of lanky looking, a good dose of a 10-10-10 would be great.
Okay. Good morning, Texter says. Thank you for the garden show. You're welcome. What causes the ground or lawn to sink and become uneven in some areas? This is going to be up to 2 to 3 feet wide. Yeah, I've seen that.
2 to 3 feet. I suppose it depends on how deep we're talking. If it's more than a couple inches, I would be pretty concerned about that. As far as the ground sinking or changing over time, just the natural freeze-thaw cycle can cause that. So it's just a natural occurrence, with soils, especially with clays, with heavier clays, they're shrinking and swelling soil forms. So it's really just a natural occurrence, and, you know, whatever is growing on the surface is going to also, you know, be moved with those shrinking and swelling or freezing and thawing cycles.
John, what would be the process of building that up and leveling it out?
You can do that especially if it's an area where you're recreating and you're worried about safety. Ideally, you'd like to try to match the soil type. If you're going to try to level out an area and add more soil, you can do that by just adding light layers on top of the existing grass. I wouldn't go any more than half an inch or so at a time. But that's definitely one way of smoothing out a surface over time.
So it's a process. Okay. Let's see. Good morning. I have several peony plants, Texter says. Two of them thankfully bloom beautifully. The other one, the last several years, developed buds about 1 centimeter, but they didn't grow beyond that, nor did they bloom. The plant has not been divided in at least 30 years. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, that could be part of it. It may be that plant has lived its life. That's another possibility. Plants do have, you know, a length of life in them. And so you could try to do maybe try fertilization. That might be helpful. You may choose later in the season, around August, to divide it and move it. Peonies are pretty tricky because they have to be replanted at exactly the same height. That's about 1.5 inches below the surface. And they have huge tuberous roots. That's the other thing to consider. So when you're digging a peony up, you really have to dig down deeply, and you have to try to get as big a root ball as you can, and then you can go ahead and divide it and then replant those sections. And it takes a couple of years before they rebloom. So you can weigh your factors there. It may be that peony is done, and you want to replace it with a new cultivar. You may want to try dividing it. Again, that's later in the season. And we have a new video that's going to be coming out later this summer on dividing peonies and planting bare root peonies.
See, yet another great piece of information.
We've been busy.
Extension.umn.edu. If you have never checked it out, you must do that. All that great information these folks work so hard to put in there. This listener's asked, when can I prune an old crab apple tree?
We've kind of missed that window for the year. We normally recommend pruning fruit trees, and that would include ornamental crab trees, in late winter or very early spring. And we are kind of past that at this point. The problem with pruning them now is that it opens up wounds in the tree for potential infection by insects, bacteria, fungal issues. So I would say leave it alone now and just put it on your calendar next winter to prune it.
All right. And before we break for a look at that weather forecast, John, a listener, in fact, more than one, wants to know about crabgrass control. What's the process this time of year?
Well, it depends on where they're at right now for my recommendation. So if they're below the 94 corridor, I would recommend focusing more on just fertilizing right now. We're kind of past the point where a crabgrass preventer is going to prevent crabgrass seedlings from germinating because we have too high of soil temperatures. So south of 94, I would not recommend across the state. Have too high of soil temperatures. So south of 94, I would not recommend across the state. So basically the bottom half of the state, I would not recommend a crabgrass preventer. But the northern half still is within that optimal range of preventing crabgrass using a pre-emergent herbicide. So if you're below 94, south of 94, fertilize, and maybe if it's a really bad emergence of crabgrass, you could look at doing some post-emergent control of those crabgrass seedlings.
Okay, very good. I tell you what, before we even break for weather, I noticed that we grabbed another call. Marie in St. Paul. I don't want to keep Marie waiting. Let's hear from Marie in St. Paul. Marie, what's your question, please?
Hi. Yeah, I've got a level average city lot in St. Paul, and we are wondering what they like and or use for a lawnmower. I know there's battery-operated, quartered, and gas mowers, and we've had a gas mower, but it gave out on us, and thinking about switching to something else possibly. So just kind of looking for some ideas.
That's a good question. Oh,
good question. Never had that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've really come a long way with battery-powered lawnmowers. One of the appeals appealing aspects of a battery-powered piece of equipment is the reduced maintenance on them. You're certainly going to have a higher upfront cost, but you also reduce the greenhouse gas emissions from using a gas combusting engine like a traditional lawnmower. So if you have this, if you have a smaller or even just a typical urban lawn that's a little bit smaller in size. That's where those make a lot of sense, simply because you can take care of the lawn on a single charge, and it'll work just fine with that. If you have a much bigger lot size, maybe I'd still consider looking at the standard gas-powered engine.
And every year they come out with better ones. Every year.
Yeah. I have to tell Ms. Marie, we have a battery-powered lawnmower. We have a double lot and not a lot of grass or lawn, but it's great. It's quieter, I think. And like John said, you don't have the exhaust factor, and it's really easy to put it away for the winter. You don't have to do anything to it. I think the one thing, John, is keeping the blade sharp is important on no matter what kind you have, right?
Exactly. Thanks, Julie. And that's going to be the same regardless of the engine type,
right,
or the motor type. Just ensuring that you're getting a clean cut, having your mower blade sharpened every year is a really good practice, and just inspected at the very least every year.
And before we break, as far as lawn length, when we cut, I tend to leave it kind of long, maybe between 3 and 4 inches. I know that seems kind of long, but it seems to help.
Absolutely. A higher mowing height is going to mean less mowing between mowing events, because we recommend not removing any more than 1/3 of the above ground plant tissue at a time. It also means the lawn is going to be more drought tolerant. It's going to be more resistant to weeds like crabgrass, and it's just going to have an overall higher density to resist other pests and be able to recover from other forms of damage.
All right. I'm already planning on mowing, so that's the question. Let's take this break, having a look at that forecast. We have more show to come on our Smart Garden Show. Call us or text us. We have a bunch more text messages to impart here. 651-461-9226 from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show on CCO. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those very lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. Callers and texters, so let's get back to it. Karen is the first up here, calling from St. Paul. Hi, Karen. What's your question?
Hi. I have a knockout rose shrub that I bought and kept in a pot all last summer, brought it indoors for the winter. It continued to flower for a while. I want to know, in bringing it outside again, what temperature should I wait to bring it outdoors for it to thrive? And also, should I get it out of the pot and put it in the ground?
Okay, well, the knockout roses, many of them are hardy for Minnesota, and they are an excellent rose. They are a good landscape rose as well. And so you can certainly plant it outside. I think I would probably do that this year. Roses really like to expand and grow. They don't really like to be confined. And this is if it's a standard size. They also have miniature roses too, little tiny roses. Those are actually more suitable to containers. And I think, getting it into the soil would be a good idea. Pick a nice sunny location. Mix in some compost into your soil so you have a nice rich soil bed for that plant. And then in the fall, you're going to want to protect it because rabbits also like roses too. And so screening it with some hardware cloth, putting in some straw to completely cover it for the winter, and then uncovering it in the spring would be a good idea. And protect. You may even want to keep that fencing up a little bit into the spring before as the bunnies are coming out and out of hibernation. Other than that, it's a great plant. It's a beautiful plant. So congratulations on that. That's really a wonderful plant to have.
Julie, I mentioned in the forecast that windy. It's been windy, and it looks like it still will be for the next few days or so. And you brought up a point about what can we do to help new trees, young trees?
Yeah, so with the wind that we have, you definitely want to stake your new trees, especially on the windward side of the tree to help prevent that tree from tipping with the wind. And that you can always right those trees, but you really want to start out with a good safe staking system for those trees. We have a great website on how to do that under Planting Trees and Shrubs, under our Trees and Shrubs section of Yard and Garden. And so that would be extension.umn.edu, and go to Yard and Garden and Trees and Shrubs and look for that, how to stake those plants. That's going to be important, particularly in the windier conditions that we've been having.
Okay. Let's grab another phone call this morning. Paul calling in from Ogilvy. Paul, what is your question, please?
Well, right now it doesn't look like we're going to be dry for a while. But the last couple of years in my orchard, my big apple trees have dried out, and all of a sudden they'll drop the apples. Is there any efficient way to get some water to those roots?
Yeah, that's a great idea, Paul, and it's important to be watching that, especially on your mature trees and fruit trees in particular, because you want good development of fruit. You can use a soaker hose and encircle those. I don't know how many trees you have, but you could try using soaker hoses and then turning that on. That's an efficient way to get water over a long period of time to your apple trees and get that water where those plants need it, and that's at the roots. You can also do a bubbler if you just have a couple of trees, and that's just a fixture that you attach to the end of a hose and then water, put that right at the base of the tree again. That's the important thing. You can use also some low-emitting sprinklers that would just apply that water in a bigger area, too, if you have more than a few trees.
Okay. John, this texter says this: we have a large area of grass on the south side of our house that is dying and loose turf that pulls up. There are several grubs that were under the grass that we pulled up. Our lawn also has tracks everywhere. Is it possible there are voles? The dead areas are growing, but how can we fix this problem?
Well, if you're seeing large areas that have been dug up or that are dead and you're finding white grubs, there's a really good or really strong possibility it's the white grubs themselves, which are larvae of beetles like Japanese beetle and mastchafers. It's the white grubs that could be causing that damage. They're root pruning insects, and that's why the turf can pull up so easily. Now, right now is actually a great time to be applying a grub preventer. And what those products, especially GrubX is a trade name for one. It's chlorantraniliprole is the active ingredient. That's the chemical, the ibuprofen of the Advil. that's working on that. And right now is a great time to do that, especially if you've already confirmed that there were grubs there last year. There's a pretty strong possibility that they're still there. You can dig and find them. You'll have to dig down just a little bit deeper than just the soil surface right now, but you should be able to find them if they are there and they're the ones that are causing the problem. Otherwise, I would just recommend seeding and fertilizing and just considering and just there and they're the ones that are causing the problem. Otherwise, I would just recommend seeding and fertilizing and just considering and just managing the turf as normal.
I know we get this question all the time. John, I'm sure you do every day. What grass seed do you recommend to buy from any particular store?
Well, we do have a link on purchasing grass seed. If you just use your favorite web search engine and just type in UMN turf grass purchase grass seed or just search for purchasing grass seed in Minnesota, you should be able to find a link on this where we go into a lot more detail for finding the right grass seed for your lawn and for your uses. We're really big fans of the fine fescues and tall fescues because they're lower input turf grass species, and they're really well adapted for Minnesota soils and conditions.
All right,
Hey, John. Hey, John.
Yes.
I just clicked on our lawn care webpage, and we have a nice new webpage called Buying Turf Grass Seed for Minnesota Lawns. There, so easy to find.
Hot off the presses.
Hot off the press.
extension.umn.edu. Check it out. I'll tell you what, when we come back, let's briefly mention what's going on at the Arboretum. I just renewed my annual membership this morning, as a matter of fact. But anyway, we're going to take this quick break and be right back with more Smart Garden here. See, what is our temperature reading in the Twin Cities? 56. We may hit 61. We'll drop to 47 overnight. Showers, maybe thunderstorms coming up Sunday and again Sunday night. You stay with us. News Talk 830 WCCO. Had a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to the this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Our lawn and garden guests this morning are experts Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M. Julie, I mentioned before the break, we always like to mention the Arboretum. What a great place. What's going on? This is, of course, some people's favorite time of year to get out there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I had an opportunity the other day to just wander around, at least around the buildings, and oh my gosh. Well, the tulips are opening up, so it's not going to be long before we have the big shoe of tulips. And in the annual garden, that's right at the intersection where you turn to go onto 3 Mile Drive. There's also some tremendous magnolias that are blooming. My particular favorite is called the butterfly magnolia. It's a yellow-flowered magnolia. It's beautiful. It was just starting to open when I was wandering around. There's certainly bulbs, other bulbs, small bulbs like Chionodoxa and some other little bulbs that are blooming too. A lot of great plants. The forsythia is still blooming. Now, we don't know about after this rain. That's the only thing, is that rain can knock those flower buds off. But this is a time, every day you go out, you're going to see something new there.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a lot of great classes to sign up for. So I would encourage people to take a look at our Learn link on the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum site. And that webpage is arb.umn.edu.
And that's how you make a reservation to get out there and park.
Yeah, and now members do not need a reservation for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays.
Uh-huh.
They can get in through the Easy Pass lane with their member card.
Another benefit. Yet another.
Another benefit. Right. Making it easier.
That's great. Thanks for that. John, I think it's an important question because somebody heard you mention the last half hour, and I think a lot of people may have the same question. Why do you no longer recommend weed and feed anymore now?
Well, there's just better strategies for trying to control weeds if you have them. So one of the challenges with a weed and feed product is that you're broadcasting a herbicide to the environment, regardless of what weeds are there. So there's limitations on the active ingredients found within those weed and feed products, and sometimes they're not very effective at controlling difficult weeds like Creeping Charlie or Wild Violets. And the other strategy is that because we recommend water and fertilizer, It has to be taken up through the roots to control the weeds. And so many of those active ingredients work better through the shoots or work just as well through the shoots and not necessarily just through the roots. So it just produces all kinds of problems for trying to control weeds. It's much better, much more effective for spot treating weeds when and wherever they're located and targeting specific weeds.
Okay. I think we have time for one more phone call, and let's see how many text messages we can answer. Ken is calling you from Blaine. Hi, Ken. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. I had a large bed of Pachysandra on the east side of my house, and, of course, Pachysandra, the leaves go through the winter, and nothing usually happens to them. This year, all of the leaves have died back, and a lot of the stems look like they're, you know, not going to survive. So what happened this winter? Because I never had this problem from winter to winter before.
Well, I am really sorry to hear that, Ken, because Pachysandra is a lovely ground cover, and usually we don't have issues with it. The only thing I can think of without understanding the soil and everything that's in your location is that this year we had absolutely no snow cover. And so there was no protection on that plant as an insulator. Snow's a really good insulator. And so that plant was subject to our cold snaps that we did have. We had a mild winter, yes, but we also had some really cold temperatures, and I'm kind of guessing that it was hit with that cold. I'd be interested to know if it actually comes back, if the roots are maybe still alive, but it's just the upper part of the plant above the soil that died back. So it'd be interesting to watch. I wouldn't give up on it at this point, but yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, because it's an expensive plant and it's a beautiful plant. So I hope it comes back for you.
Texter says, is it too early to see growth on a river birch tree planted in July of last year?
No, and there's nothing to do about it if it is. So, but I don't think it's too early. We have a lot of plants that are emerging. Their leaves are emerging on the branches. So now I don't think it's too early at all.
Okay. This listener says, I recently thinned out some large pine trees and removed about 5 to 6 feet of branches. Will grass or wildflowers grow under them? I heard the soil would be too acidic.
That is a potential problem with pine needles, is that they do acidify the soil over time. You could always just collect a soil sample, but quite frankly, changing pH is fairly difficult, especially in our lifetimes. So, you know, from naturally planting plants. So maybe collect a soil sample if you're worried about it. Otherwise, you could just try to grow some grass. All turf grasses need at least a couple of hours of direct sunlight. If they're getting less than that, then maybe something else is a little bit more suitable for that condition.
Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely look at our Gardening in the Shade webpage, and pine needles is a beautiful mulch. It's a great mulch. And a soil sample, as John said, is important, but take a look at Gardening in the Shade, that webpage on extension.umn.edu under Yard and Garden. And it gives a list of different kinds of plants that are suitable for different conditions. I think one of the biggest issues with pines is that the soil is usually quite dry, and that dry shade is one of the more difficult places to grow plants. But there are plants that will grow there.
We have a little over a minute to go on the show. Denny, Julie, and John, what is a good way to deal with river birch roots in the grass?
John, not much to do,
no.
I don't think.
Accept them.
Accept them and mulch them, maybe?
Yeah, potentially. If they're a problem for mowing or walking on, mm-hmm. maybe consider mulching like Juliet said.
Okay, very good. And just a final reminder on a couple of things. Get to the Arboretum, number one.
Yes.
Get to the Arboretum. And also for those that have never checked it out, Julie, give us that University of Minnesota website.
extension.umn.edu. Click on Yard and Garden, and you'll see a whole array of different garden, landscape, lawn, plants, disease issues, all sorts of guidelines from us. And we have a also yard and garden news that you can subscribe to as well.
Any quick hint on lawn care before you take your leave, John?
I would, you know, just kind of appreciate the rain that we're finally getting.
Definitely.
But no, I maintain your lawn at least 3.5 inches is a good suggestion. And mow only as needed.
Excellent. Let's hope for more showers. It looks like we're going to get our wish. Thank you both. We'll have you back on too. Julie, thank you. And John, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Denny.
You betcha.
Our pleasure.
All right. Julie Weisenhorn, John Trappi from the University of Minnesota. Now get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindes from Lindes Construction. Andy will be coming along right after the news break here on CCO. Cloudy day today, 61 degrees. It's going to be more windy conditions coming up. Showers tomorrow and again tomorrow night and maybe this week. Stay with us on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Yes, and I'm happy to say I will be joined today by Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. And I know, Julie, we are awaiting our turf guru, John Trappi, as well. Right?
That's right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot of good power, brain power here this morning. So if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your hour here on Smart Garden. Call us or text us at 651-461-9226. And while we're waiting for John to join us, Julie, this rain, I mean, it's hearing the rain on my on the windows is wonderful. I love it.
It's great. Yeah, it's been really wonderful. It's taken us out of our drought status in a lot of places, which is wonderful. And then also it has, really just helped green things up. I mean, it's just amazing how fast plants will just start emerging. It's really awesome.
And Julie, I think John has joined us.
April showers bring May flowers.
That's right.
Woohoo!
John, good morning. Welcome. Thanks for joining us along with Julie today. And again, 651-461-9226. We're already getting, not a big surprise, the questions that came in actually even before the show started. So maybe we should just get underway here so we don't get kind of backlog. Let me start with this first text this morning, if I may. Should we cut back our spindly hydrangeas? I was filling in bare spots, Texter says, on our lawn 3 weeks ago. I roughed up the area, seeded and covered with soil, have watered. Nothing is happening. Do you think something's wrong?
Well,
so
I'll address
a couple of questions there. Looks
I'll address the hydrangea question first because we have an excellent resource on our extension yard and garden site. It's the Turf and Shrubs webpage. under Yard and Garden, and it is a video on how to prune your hydrangeas. So you can take a look at that. And yes, you can certainly prune your hydrangeas now.
Okay, John, what do you think about the nothing growing yet as far as the seeded areas?
I would try to be just a little bit patient because I personally seeded some areas. I live in the Twin Cities, and I haven't seen any germination yet of any of the fine fescues that I seeded. So even though I'm confident they'll still emerge. So be just a little bit patient. If you don't see anything in the next week or 10 days, that's when I would start being concerned and maybe consider seeding just a little bit more.
All right, very good.
Hey, John, could it have anything to do with the seed itself?
There is potential if it was, if it was seed that was old and, had very low germination rates. Every package of seed that you purchase has a testing date as well as a sampling date on the label itself. So if you have some old seed and you're wondering about whether or not it's still viable, you can start there. Another thing you could do is just try to do a simple germination test by just using some paper towels. If there's any doubt about some old seed maybe you have left over from years past, you can always just use a paper towel and put some seed in it between two layers and water that, and then just put that inside a Ziploc bag and just see what kind of germination you get from those seeds in a controlled environment. But most of the time, seed is good for a couple of years as long as it's kept dry.
Okay, good to know. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Traffy from the U of M answering those questions. Now, especially today, and Julie will agree, as long as we have John with us this morning, if you have any kind of a turf-type question, your lawn question, this is an opportunity to ask John those very questions. And, of course, any other kind of a gardening question for Julie as well. Again, callers, texters. Let's go to the phones. Tom is calling this morning in from Golden Valley. Tom, what is your question this morning?
Good morning. A pest control company recently inspected our property and said they found termites in the trees near our house. Is this for real? Are termites in Minnesota, and do I need to do anything?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Termites are in Minnesota, but they are subterranean, as I understand. The little bit that I know about termites, they're not a big problem here because of our winters that we have and our conditions. But anything that we might have, in fact, here's a... Let me just click on this. I'm looking at our household insect information. And it just says that they're basically pretty rare here. So
yeah.
One thing you could do is contact the entomology department at the University of Minnesota. And if you can capture any of them, that would be great. And you could see if somebody could identify them conclusively for you. But they're very rare in Minnesota, and they're subterranean. They wouldn't be necessarily in a tree. More likely, and I would think the pest control folks would know the difference, they may be carpenter ants that are, if you have a rotting tree or something like that. So, it'd be really good to have them identified conclusively by maybe a impartial party.
I have never heard in all my years on CCO, mm-hmm. and there are many, that have termites in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities specifically. I would call a good arborist.
Call an arborist as well, sure. Yeah, they could come in here as well. But there are different stages of life cycle of carpenter ants, and they can be kind of a confusion between the two of them.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I would
find it very unusual if there was, especially if they're in a tree. Sometimes insects
for
get to,
whatever reason, try to do some exercise.
Oops.
Feel small.
Well, I don't know where
that sorry came. About that. sometimes insects come through shipping materials and packaging materials, but then they would usually be found in those materials and not necessarily be infecting a tree.
Yeah. Tom in Golden Valley, if you ever get an answer on that one way or the other, we'd love to hear back. It's interesting. Let's grab it. Valley, if you get an answer on that one way or the other, we'd love to hear back. It's interesting. Let's grab another call before we pick up on text messages. Bobby's calling in from Bloomington this morning. Bobby, what is your question, please?
Well, good morning, first of all. I overwinter my geraniums in the house, and they've been blooming somewhat all winter. When can I put them outside?
They can go outside when our evening temperatures are roughly around in the 50s, and they're kind of coming up as far as what I've seen. So on a personal note, my geraniums are outside, but they're in a pretty protected space. So they do need to acclimate to the outdoors, so you don't want to put them directly right in the sun, but just kind of put them in a shady, protected site. Keep them out of the wind if you can, and we've had such windy days. And then slowly move them into a sunnier environment. But look for those 50-degree nighttime temperatures.
All right, very good. Texter Julie and John want to know, when is the best time to treat ash tree for EAB?
Oh, that you can find out on our Emerald Ash Borer webpage on our site. And I think it's usually around this time of year, but I'm not entirely certain. There may be a couple different times of year to treat for that. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture also has good information on that. They also have good decision-making tools as to whether you need to treat or not. There's a couple different things that you have to consider: cost, frequency, affecting other plants around the tree if you're doing a soil drench, whether the tree is worth it, how valuable it is. So take a look at that. You can start, though, at the University of Minnesota Extension page under Yard and Garden, or just type Emerald Ash Borer into our search window, and you'll get your information there.
John, what can we do, homeowners, for our lawns at this time? I mean, is it the fertilizing, weed and feed? What should or should not we do to our lawns at this point, this week or next?
Well, we definitely do not recommend weed and feed products anymore. That's a pretty good starting point. But if somebody is looking to try to fill in any gaps from grass that maybe have been lost last summer or fall or winter even, this is a great time to apply a spring fertilizer. And I think, you know, any time right now before, especially taking advantage of these rainfall events we have coming up, is a great time to apply a little bit of nitrogen in the fertilizer or from the fertilizer.
Okay. All right, hang on. We'll take a quick break and be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question this morning for Julie or John, please call or text 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, it's 56 degrees. We should see highs of around 61. And chance of showers overnight. And for your Sunday tomorrow, showers are likely, possibly even a thunderstorm, Sunday and Sunday night. So be aware of that. Overcast now, CCO temp 56. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. We thank Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M joining us today, answering any kind of a lawn question you may have and a garden question as well at 651-461-9226. Julie and John, Rick is calling in, I believe, from Buffalo this morning. Rick, good morning. What is your question, please?
I got a question on lawn. I've got a bunch of cedar trees in my backyard, and can't seem to get grass to grow underneath of them. Is it because of the soil, or the cedar trees don't allow for grass to grow? Just trying to get it to become grassy instead of such a muddy hole.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really common problem, trying to grow anything underneath of a cedar tree. They really block out sunlight and then rain. And, of course, they're competing for nutrients from the soil. It's just really difficult to get anything to grow, especially turf grasses. So it's kind of pick and choose whether or not you'd like to have the cedar trees or have a lawn, but you're probably not going to be able to have both, at least in the exact same spot.
Okay. This listener sent this text. I have a hydrangea for Easter. I got a hydrangea for Easter in a small pot. Had it transplanted in a big pot. Can I put it outside now?
Yeah, again, it's if it's been indoors all the time, then you want to acclimate your plants to be to go outside into the new environment, basically, that they're going to grow in. And we're looking for temperatures in the 50s at night, maybe high 40s you could get away with in a protected location. And with these plants, you want to just work them into their ideal situation. So if they're a full sun plant like the hydrangea, you would want to start by just putting it in a protected space out of the wind in a shady location and then work it just, you know, every few days as it acclimates to that condition, then move it into a little bit more sun, a little bit more sun. And that will help the plant acclimate into the newer conditions. It is a probably not a hardy hydrangea. These are florist hydrangeas. And so you can just enjoy it for the summer and then decide in the fall if it's a plant that you want to try to overwinter in your house and hopefully enjoy it next year too.
Very good. A listener says or asks, is it okay to put 10-10-10 fertilizer on my rhubarb?
Oh, yeah. Rhubarb is actually a pretty big feeder. In other words, it needs quite a bit of nutrition. And if you're starting to see a plant that is maybe, you know, the petioles, which is the part we eat, people would call them the stems, but they're actually petioles. If you start to see them smaller and maybe kind of lanky looking, a good dose of a 10-10-10 would be great.
Okay. Good morning, Texter says. Thank you for the garden show. You're welcome. What causes the ground or lawn to sink and become uneven in some areas? This can be up to 2 to 3 feet wide. Yeah, I've seen that.
2 to 3 feet. I suppose it depends on how deep we're talking.
Yeah.
If it's more than a couple inches, I'd be pretty concerned about that. As far as the ground sinking or changing over time, just the natural freeze-thaw cycle can cause that. So it's just a natural occurrence. You know, with soils, especially with clays, with heavier clays, they're shrinking and swelling soil forms. So it's really just a natural occurrence. And, you know, the whatever is growing on the surface is going to also, you know, be moved with those shrinking and swelling or freezing and thawing cycles.
John, what would be the process of building that up and leveling it out?
You can do that if it's, especially if it's, you know, an area where you're recreating and you're worried about safety. Ideally, you'd like to try to match the soil type. If you're going to try to level out an area and add more soil, you can do that by just adding light layers on top of the existing grass. I wouldn't go any more than half an inch or so at a time. But that's definitely one way of smoothing out a surface over time.
So it's a process. Okay. Let's see. Good morning. I have several peony plants, Texter says. Two of them thankfully bloom beautifully. The other one, the last several years, developed buds about 1 centimeter, but they didn't grow beyond that, nor did they bloom. The plant has not been divided in at least 30 years. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, that could be part of it. It may be that that plant has lived its life. That's another possibility. Plants do have, you know, a length of life in them. And so you could try to do, maybe try fertilization. That might be helpful. You may choose later in the season, around August, to divide it and move it. Peonies are pretty tricky because they have to be replanted at exactly the same height. That's about 1.5 inches below the surface. And they have huge tuberous roots. That's the other thing to consider. So when you're digging a peony up, you really have to dig down deeply, and you have to try to get as big a root ball as you can, and then you can go ahead and divide it and then replant those sections. And it takes a couple of years before they rebloom. So you can weigh your factors there. It may be that that peony is done and you want to replace it with a new cultivar. You may want to try dividing it. Again, that's later in the season. And we have a new video that's going to be coming out later this summer on dividing peonies and planting bare root peonies.
See, yet another great piece of information.
I know.
That extension.umn.edu. If you have never checked it out, you must do that. All that great information. These folks work so hard to put in there. This listener's asked, when can I prune an old crab apple tree?
We've kind of missed that window for the year. We normally recommend pruning fruit trees, and that would include ornamental crab trees. in late winter or very early spring, and we are kind of past that at this point. The problem with pruning them now is that it opens up wounds in the tree for potential infection by insects, bacteria, fungal issues. So I would say leave it alone now and just put it on your calendar next winter to prune it.
All right. And before we break for a look at that weather forecast, John, a listener, in fact, more than one, wants to know about crabgrass control. What's the process this time of year?
Well, it depends on where they're at right now for my recommendation. So if they're below the 94 corridor, I would recommend focusing more on just fertilizing right now. We're kind of past the point where a crabgrass preventer is going to prevent crabgrass seedlings from germinating because we have too high of soil temperatures. So south of 94, I would not recommend across the state. We have too high of soil temperatures. So south of 94, I would not recommend across the state. So basically the bottom half of the state, I would not recommend a crabgrass preventer. But the northern half still is within that optimal range of preventing crabgrass using a pre-emergent herbicide. So if you're below 94, south of 94, fertilize, and maybe if it's a really bad emergence of crabgrass, you could look at doing some post-emergent control of those crabgrass seedlings.
Okay, very good. I tell you what, before we even break for weather, I noticed that we grabbed another call. Marie in St. Paul. I don't want to keep Marie waiting. Let's hear from Marie in St. Paul. Marie, what's your question, please?
Hi. Yeah, I've got a level average city lot in St. Paul, and we are wondering what they like and or use for a lawnmower. Like, I know there's battery-operated, quartered, and gas mowers, and we've had a gas mower, but it gave out on us, and thinking about switching to something else possibly. So just kind of looking for some ideas.
That's a good question. Oh,
good question. Never had that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've really come a long way with battery powered lawnmowers. One of the appeals appealing aspects of a battery powered piece of equipment is the reduced maintenance on them. You're certainly going to have a higher upfront cost, but you also reduce the greenhouse gas emissions from using a gas combusting engine like a traditional lawnmower. So if you have this, if you have a smaller or even just a typical urban lawn that's a little bit smaller in size, that's where those make a lot of sense. Simply because you can take care of the lawn on a single charge and it'll work just fine with that. If you have a much bigger lot size, maybe I'd still consider looking at the standard gas-powered engine.
And every year they come out with better ones. Every year.
Yeah. I have to tell Ms. Marie, we have a battery-powered lawnmower. We have a double lot and not a lot of grass or lawn, but it's great. It's quieter, I think. And like John said, you don't have the exhaust factor, and it's really easy to put it away for the winter. You don't have to do anything to it. I think the one thing, John, is keeping the blade sharp is important on no matter what kind you have, right?
Exactly. Thanks, Julie. And that's going to be the same regardless of the engine type,
right,
or the motor type. Just ensuring that you're getting a clean cut, having your mower blade sharpened every year is a really good practice, and just inspected at the very least every year.
And before we break, as far as lawn length, when we cut, I tend to leave it kind of long, maybe between 3 and 4 inches. I know that seems kind of long, but it seems to help.
Absolutely. A higher mowing height is going to mean less mowing between mowing events, because we recommend not removing any more than 1/3 of the above ground plant tissue at a time. It also means the lawn is going to be more drought tolerant. It's going to be more resistant to weeds like crabgrass, and it's just going to have an overall higher density to resist other pests and be able to recover from other forms of damage.
All right. I'm already planning on mowing, so that's another question. Let's take this break, having a look at that forecast. We have more show to come on our Smart Garden Show. Call us or text us. We have a bunch more text messages to impart here. 651-461-9226 from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show on CCO. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those very lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. Callers and texters, so let's get back to it. Karen is first up here, calling from St. Paul. Hi, Karen. What's your question?
Hi. I have a knockout rose shrub that I bought and kept in a pot all last summer, brought it indoors for the winter. It continued to flower for a while. I want to know, in bringing it outside again, what temperature should I wait to bring it outdoors for it to thrive? And also, should I get it out of the pot and put it in the ground?
Okay, well, the knockout roses, many of them are hardy for Minnesota, and they are an excellent rose. They are a good landscape rose as well, and so you can certainly plant it outside. I think I would probably do that this year. Roses really like to expand and grow. They don't really like to be confined, and this is if it's a standard size. They also have miniature roses, too. Little tiny roses, those are actually more suitable to containers. And I think, getting it into the soil would be a good idea. Pick a nice sunny location, mix in some compost into your soil so you have a nice rich soil bed for that plant. And then in the fall, you're going to want to protect it because rabbits also like roses too. And so screening it with some hardware cloth, putting in some straw to completely cover it for the winter, and then uncovering it in the spring would be a good idea. And protect. You may even want to keep that fencing up a little bit into the spring before the, you know, as the bunnies are coming out and out of hibernation. Other than that, it's a great plant. It's a beautiful plant. So congratulations on that. That's really a wonderful plant to have.
Julie, I mentioned in the forecast that windy. It's been windy, and it looks like it still will be for the next few days or so. And you brought up a point about what can we do to help new trees, young trees?
Yeah, so with the wind that we have, you definitely want to stake your new trees, especially on the windward side of the tree to help prevent that tree from tipping with the wind. And that can, you can always right those trees, but you really want to start out with a good, safe staking system for those trees. We have a great website on how to do that under planting trees and shrubs, under our trees and shrubs section of Yard and Garden. And so that would be extension.umn.edu, and go to Yard and Garden and trees and shrubs and look for that, how to stake those plants. That's going to be important, particularly in the windier conditions that we've been having.
Okay. Let's grab another phone call this morning. Paul calling in from Ogilvy. Paul, what is your question, please?
Well, right now it doesn't look like we're going to be dry for a while. But the last couple of years in my orchard, my big apple trees have dried out, and all of a sudden they'll drop the apples. Is there any efficient way to get some water to those roots?
Yeah, that's a great idea, Paul, and it's important to be watching that, especially on your mature trees and fruit trees in particular, because you want good development of fruit. You can use a soaker hose and encircle those. I don't know how many trees you have, but you could try using soaker hoses and then turning that on. That's an efficient way to get water over a long period of time to your apple trees and get that water where those plants need it, and that's at the roots. You can also do a kind of a bubbler if you just have a couple of trees, and that's just a fixture that you attach to the end of a hose and then water put that right at the base of the tree again. That's the important thing. You can use also some low-emitting sprinklers that would just apply that water in a bigger area, too, if you have more than a few trees.
Okay. John, this texter says this: we have a large area of grass on the south side of our house that is dying and loose turf that pulls up. There are several grubs that were under the grass that we pulled up. Our lawn also has tracks everywhere. Is it possible there are voles? The dead areas are growing, but how can we fix this problem?
Well, if you're seeing large areas that have been dug up or that are dead and you're finding white grubs, there's a really good or really strong possibility it's the white grubs themselves, which are larvae of beetles like Japanese beetle and mast chafers. It's the white grubs that could be causing that damage. They're root pruning insects, and that's why the turf can pull up so easily. Now, right now is actually a great time to be applying a grub preventer. And what those products, especially Grub X is a trade name for one. It's chlorantraniliprole is the active ingredient. That's the chemical, the ibuprofen of the Advil that's working on that. And right now is a great time to do that, especially if you've already confirmed that there were grubs there last year. There's a pretty strong possibility that they're still there. You can dig and find them. You'll have to dig down just a little bit deeper than just the soil surface right now, but you should be able to find them if they are there and they're the ones that are causing the problem. Otherwise, I would just recommend seeding and fertilizing and just considering and just there, and they're the ones that are causing the problem. Otherwise, I would just recommend seeding and fertilizing and just considering and just managing the turf as normal.
I know we get this question all the time. John, I'm sure you do every day. What grass seed do you recommend to buy from any particular store?
Well, we do have a link on purchasing grass seed. If you just use your favorite web search engine and just type in UMN Turfgrass Purchase Grass Seed or just search for purchasing grass seed in Minnesota, you should be able to find a link on this where we go into a lot more detail for finding the right grass seed for your lawn and for your uses. We're really big fans of the fine fescues and tall fescues because they're lower input turf grass species, and they're really well adapted for Minnesota soils and conditions.
All right,
hey,
very
John.
Good.
Hey, John.
Yes.
I just clicked on our lawn care webpage, and we have a nice new webpage called Buying Turf Grass Seed for Minnesota Lawns there, so easy to find.
Hot off the presses.
Hot off the press.
extension.umn.edu. Check it out. I tell you what, when we come back, let's briefly mention what's going on at the Arboretum. I just renewed my annual membership this morning, as a matter of fact. But anyway, we're going to take this quick break and be right back with more Smart Garden here. See, what is our temperature rating in the Twin Cities? 56. We may hit 61. We'll drop to 47 overnight. Showers, maybe thunderstorms coming up Sunday and again Sunday night. You stay with us. News Talk 830 WCCO. Had a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Our lawn and garden guests this morning are experts Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M. Julie, I mentioned before the break, we always like to mention the Arboretum. What a great place. What's going on? This is, of course, some people's favorite time of year to get out there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I had an opportunity the other day to just wander around, at least around the buildings, and oh my gosh. Well, the tulips are opening up, so it's not going to be long before we have the big shoe of tulips and in the annual garden. That's right at the intersection where you turn to go onto 3 Mile Drive. There's also some tremendous magnolias that are blooming. My particular favorite is called the butterfly magnolia. It's a yellow-flowered magnolia. It's beautiful. It was just starting to open when I was wandering around. There's certainly bulbs, other bulbs, small bulbs like Chionodoxa and some other little bulbs that are blooming too. Yeah, a lot of great plants. The forsythia is still blooming. Now, I don't know about after this rain. That's the only thing, is that rain can knock those flower buds off. But this is a time, every day you go out, you're going to see something new there.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a lot of great classes to sign up for. So I would encourage people to take a look at our Learn link on the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum site. And that webpage is arb.umn.edu.
And that's how you make a reservation to get out there and park.
Yeah, and now members do not need a reservation for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. Uh-huh. They can get in through the Easy Pass lane with their member card.
Another benefit, yet another.
Another benefit, right. Making it easier.
That's great. Thanks for that. John, I think it's an important question because somebody heard you mention the last half hour, and I think a lot of people may have the same question. Why do you no longer recommend weed and feed anymore now?
Well, there's just better strategies for trying to control weeds if you have them. So one of the challenges with a weed and feed product is that you're broadcasting a herbicide to the environment, regardless of what weeds are there. So there's limitations on the active ingredients found within those weed and feed products, and sometimes they're not very effective at controlling difficult weeds like Creeping Charlie or Wild Violets. And the other strategy is that because we recommend water and fertilizer, it has to be taken up through the roots to control the weeds. And so many of those active ingredients work better through the shoots or work just as well through the shoots and not necessarily just through the roots. So it just produces all kinds of problems for trying to control weeds. It's much better, much more effective for spot treating weeds when and wherever they're located and targeting specific weeds.
Okay. I think we have time for one more phone call, and let's see how many text messages we can answer. Ken is calling you from Blaine. Hi, Ken. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. I had a large bed of Pachysandra on the east side of my house, and of course, Pachysandra, the leaves go through the winter and nothing usually happens to them. This year, all of the leaves have died back, and a lot of the stems look like they're, you know, not going to survive. So what happened this winter? Because I never had this problem from winter to winter before.
Well, I am really sorry to hear that, Ken, because Pachysandra is a lovely ground cover, and usually we don't have issues with it. The only thing I can think of without understanding the soil and everything that's in your location is that this year we had absolutely no snow cover. And so there was no protection on that plant as an insulator. Snow's a really good insulator. And so that plant was subject to our cold snaps that we did have. We had a mild winter, yes, but we also had some really cold temperatures, and I'm kind of guessing that it was hit with that cold. I'd be interested to know if it actually comes back, if the roots are maybe still alive, but it's just the upper part of the plant above the soil that died back. So it'd be interesting to watch. I wouldn't give up on it at this point, but yeah, I'm sorry to hear that because it's an expensive plant and it's a beautiful plant. So I hope it comes back for you.
Texter says, is it too early to see growth on a river birch tree planted in July of last year?
No, and there's nothing to do about it if it is. So, but I don't think it's too early. We have a lot of plants that are emerging. Their leaves are emerging on the branches. So I don't think it's too early at all.
Okay. This listener says, I recently thinned out some large pine trees and removed about 5 to 6 feet of branches. Will grass or wildflowers grow under them? I heard the soil would be too acidic.
That is a potential problem with pine needles, is that they do acidify the soil over time. You could always just collect a soil sample, but quite frankly, changing pH is fairly difficult, especially in our lifetimes. So, you know, from naturally planting plants. So maybe collect a soil sample if you're worried about it. Otherwise, you could just try to grow some grass. All turf grasses need at least a couple of hours of direct sunlight. If they're getting less than that, then maybe something else is a little bit more suitable for that condition.
Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely look at our Gardening in the Shade webpage. And Pine Needles is a beautiful mulch. It's a great mulch. And a soil sample, as John said, is important. But take a look at Gardening in the Shade, that webpage on extension.umn.edu under Yard and Garden. And it gives a list of different kinds of plants that are suitable for different conditions. I think one of the biggest issues with pines is that the soil is usually quite dry, and that dry shade is one of the more difficult places to grow plants. But there are plants that will grow there.
We have a little over a minute to go on the show. Denny, Julie, and John, what is a good way to deal with river birch roots in the grass?
John, there's not much to do,
no.
I don't think.
Accept them.
Accept them and mulch them, maybe?
Yeah, potentially. If they're a problem for mowing or walking on, maybe consider mulching like Juliet said.
Okay, very good. And just a final reminder on a couple of things. Get to the Arboretum, number one.
Yes.
Get to the Arboretum. And also for those that have never checked it out, Julie, give us that University of Minnesota website.
extension.umn.edu. Click on Yard and Garden, and you'll see a whole array of different garden, landscape, lawn, plants, disease issues, all sorts of guidelines from us. And we have also Yard and Garden news that you can subscribe to as well.
Any quick hint on lawn care before you take your leave, John?
I would, just kind of appreciate the rain that we're finally getting.
Definitely.
But no, maintain your lawn at least 3.5 inches is a good suggestion. And mow only as needed.
Excellent. Let's hope for more showers. It looks like we're going to get our wish. Thank you both. We'll have you back on too. Julie, thank you. And John, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Denny.
You betcha.
Our pleasure.
All right. Julie Weisenhorn, John Trappi from the University of Minnesota. Now get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindes from Lindes Construction. Andy will be coming along right after the news break here on CCO. Cloudy day today, 61 degrees. It's going to be more windy conditions coming up. Showers tomorrow and again tomorrow night and maybe this week. Stay with us on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit bmwusa.com for details.